Idag ska vi till Toscana. Super Toscana. Och det är billigt. Ha. Önsketråd. Hej och hjärtligt välkommen till en ny episode av Kjell Svinkjeller och inte minst idag Tom Amrati Løvaas. Nu ska du få lov att skinne för att vi ska till ditt kära, ja, det är inte hemland då.
Nej, det kan jag inte säga. Si. Jag är ju norsk 100%, men ja. Jag måste ju säga si att hvis jag ska välja ett annat land som sånn på sparket så blir ju Italien. Ja, det står väldigt högt på listan där på pallen.
Åh. Oh. Topp tre?
Ja, i hvert fall topp tre.
Det, ja, det er Færøyene. Men i dag skal vi også til det område i Italia som jeg liker best.
Og som de fleste nordmenn liker best, tror jeg, for det er liksom dit de skal.
Av en lang ja, de vil gjerne dit, fordi at Toscana. Toscana. Åh, det er så fantastisk. Altså, når du lager egne TV-program med kjendiser der, da må det jo være bra. Som lager mat. Og vi skal også til Siena, og da er vi hjertet. Liten fun fact. Tor André Flo har spilt på Siena, og hvis du går inn i en bar på, i Siena og sier Tor André Flo, da er det bare Flo, 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 Flo.
Men vi har med en gjest, ja. Kjell Gabriel, og nå skal vi slå på sånn utenlandsk.
Yes, vi går på engelsk.
Så vi har med oss today Benedetta.
Hello, guys. Hi, everybody.
And you're representing a wine from Tuscany. It's I wouldn't say well known, but we have been through it before here in Norway. It's Monte Antico, and just tell us what's special about that.
Yeah, well, actually, Monte Antico is at the vin monopoly since many years because it's more than 10 years that we are in the assortment in on shelves at vin monopoly. So. The story of Monte Antico is very important, but it's to know about Monte Antico, we need to know something about the owners of our company, that is the Empson family, Neil and Maria Empson. Neil and Maria Empson, so Neil is a guy from New Zealand, and she is an Italo-American artist. She studied fine arts at the Accademia delle Belle Arti in Florence. They married as a second marriage. So they are second marriage both. And they didn't start at all with wine, actually. So they started, Neil started as a, he was buying secondhand Ferraris, coming to Italy, traveling to Italy to buy secondhand Ferrari, putting them together, restoring that sort of Pimp My Ride, and selling those cars anew to the US and to UK. So that's why he was coming always to Italy. And
so he wasn't a wine guy.
He wasn't at all a wine guy. And he started from scratch. So now you think about Ferrari, so you think he's a rich guy. No, he wasn't at all, actually. And so they were traveling to Italy to find those cars, and it goes along that if you come to Italy, you fall in love with Italian food, first of all,
yes,
and then
that's
second to Italian wine. They packed on 10 kilos the first month in Italy, just to let you know.
That's because you have this enormous food thing.
Because it's too good, yeah, too good, too good.
The lunch is like four courses.
You can't stop eating when you first start. I think that's the secret of Italy, that you just start and you can't stop.
Look like big Americans. They're kind of slim.
Because the food is good. It's not too much processed. That's why.
Ah, that's
and,
a secret.
So falling in love with Italian wines, they started drinking. They started drinking good Italian wines, and they already had entrepreneurial mind. So they thought about, but listen, in USA, nobody knows about those wines. It was late 60s. So they really started from scratch, but really with their little suitcase, knocking at the door of restaurants and saying, do you like this wine? So they really started with that. They were, just to let you know, the first to export Gaia to USA. And they had Gaia in their portfolio until the 80s, so for long. And just to let you know that how the US market was made, nobody knew about Gaia. They don't even know how to pronunciate Gaia. It was Gaja. What's Gaja? What the hell is Gaja? So just to let you know how far was the market. So, and where does, I mean, Monte Antico place in all this story? Actually, it came probably since the very beginning. Actually, it was 1975, and the owner of the winery, Monte Antico, wanted to sell the property because he didn't want to do wine anymore. Initially, Monte Antico was a table wine. It was a pretty, let's say, not very refined, not very fine wine. It was made of Sangiovese Grosso. And there was not a lot of, let's say, a lot of knowledge about how to do a good wine. So, I mean, this guy, the owner of the company, of the property, sold the whole property to a hunting and made it a hunting reserve, where they were using to hunt cinghiali.
Wild boars.
Yes. So they wanted to sell the wine that was aging in the cellar. Who you going to call? A négociant like Neil Empson was starting. So Neil bought the whole wine that was aging in the cellar and, the wine that was in the botti, in the barrels. So he started selling the wine as it was. He wasn't happy about the quality, as I told you. That's why. So he called his longtime friend, Franco Bernabei. And Franco Bernabei was appointed to search in other areas of Tuscany in order to give that finesse that initially the wine was lacking. So Franco, with his team, he search in other areas from the beginning. So the very beginning of Montantico is in the province of Grosseto, just a few kilometers away from Montalcino. Franco went up north, actually. So he went into the areas of close to Pisa, close to Colli Fiorentini. So the name of the area is Alta Valdera, Colline Pisane. He went into the IGT areas of Chianti Classico, so outside of the Siena areas. And then, of course, he kept the original area of Maremma. And so he was the one, Franco Bernabei, was the one who thought about having a blend of grapes, a mix of grapes, starting from the Sangiovese, which is the quintessential grape of Tuscany. I mean, wherever you go in Tuscany, all the wine, Chianti, Chianti Classico, Brunello di Montalcino, all is Sangiovese.
Yes.
It is a story of Sangiovese. But yeah, I mean, trying to make it a less harsh, less muscular as it was in the beginning, blending that with Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot. That was actually the kind of super Tuscan blend.
Was that in the beginning of the super Tuscan area? Because
it was actually in the pretty beginning of the super Tuscan area. So we are in the era, in those years, of Ornellaia, Sassicaia, Pergole Torte, and one also very important thing is that Neil Empson coined the term Super Tuscan. While talking about Pergole Torte, he said, wow, it's not Brunello. Wow, it's not Chianti Classico. This is a super, super wine. This is a Super Tuscan. Actually, it's not written, it's not registered, but Neil says he coined the term Super Tuscan. So, and at the time, Super Tuscan was a very expensive kind of wine. So the idea of Neil and Franco was, let's give to people something to drink that is real from Tuscany, that is authentic from Tuscany, but that doesn't cost a liver. I mean, you don't have to give your body to pay that. And that was initially, it was a very strange thing for the epoch, but the slogan for Montantico in USA was the super Tuscan you can afford. Can you really? I mean, it was very strong, very impactful.
Then the Americans love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then it was changed a little bit. It was less impolite than the Super Tuscan. Yeah, the affordable Super Tuscan. But that is the real idea that is behind Montantico. And that's why, I mean, today, I mean, we are here tasting this wine. And the finesse that, tell me if I'm talking too much, guys.
No.
The finesse about that.
We're enjoying it. Yeah.
They are laughing to me. But so the what Franco Bernabei found is mostly in Alta Valdera was the fine-grained sandy soil with some sea fossils that are actually very visible to see, that gave finesse to the wine. That finesse was given by those terroirs a little higher in altitude than the original area, And that soil, the combination of terroir, so soil and altitude, give that finesse to the wines that we are tasting today.
With that, why don't we just open a bottle and start tasting?
That is a very good idea.
I can do the working because this is really easy.
Yeah, well, that is, so guys, you are not seeing what we are doing. We are opening the wine that is in screw cup, but that is also a very particular thing. So Monte Antico started with the screw cup. So the owner of the company, Neil Empson, as I told you, is a Kiwi, he's a New Zealand guy. And in New Zealand viticulture, the screw cup is very, very common. Also for super high-end wines, they use the screw cup because, I mean, it's easier, it's less time-consuming, so less energy used in the winery. So it's more, I would not say it's more sustainable, but kind of.
It is more sustainable.
Because, and actually you do less garbage with the screw cup.
But what do you have it with screw cup in Italy as well?
Exactly. So while normally some producers do, I mean, the normal cork with the cork and capsule, and for some markets, they release the screw cap. Actually, we do the other way around. So Monte Antico comes in screw cap regularly. And for some markets like Italian market or Switzerland market or German market, those are more let's say, old-fashioned kind of market. I mean, they prefer the traditional way. We do the normal cork.
But do you think Italian will go over to screw cap in the future? Because
in the future, maybe yes, but it's not just around the corner. It's not a future
it's
around the corner.
Very traditional.
We've been talking about this screw cap cork thing so many times, and we always say the Italians will never break.
We don't have a wager yet, but maybe you should make a bet on when. And that's after you and I are not here anymore.
Right.
So we have the youngest one that we're going to taste in glass.
So today we are tasting the vintage this is the current vintage, this 2019 vintage. And so what we always say about Monte Antico is a very easy drinking wine. It is a light to medium body wine, 12.5 alcohol volumes, but with a pretty complex winemaking. So the wine is fermented in stainless steel, not a long maceration. I mean, we do not want the wine to be too much extractive, actually. And after the malolactic fermentation, the wine undergoes into aging. Aging happens in large oak barrel made by Slavonian oak, between 18 and 24 months aging. So 80%, sorry guys, goes in large barrels. 20% goes in French barrique, but second year French barrique, because as Franco Bernabei is always saying, the wine needs wood just to oxygenate. We don't want to release wood into the wine. It's just a vessel to oxygenate the wine. That's it. That's why it is not, we don't use your new wood. And then the wine stays another, the élevage is finished and fine-tuned by 3 to 6 months in bottle before being released.
But this is 2019, so it's 5 years old already.
Yeah, so, and actually we try to release the wine as late as possible, because what we see is that Sangiovese, I will never be fed up in saying that, but Sangiovese needs time, because as soon as bottled, as soon as released, Sangiovese is very difficult, is harsh, it is astringent. And so not many people like that, but you have to think about Sangiovese in the future. That's why we made a vertical tasting in these days in Oslo to let people see how Sangiovese develops. It needs time. It's like a kid. It's not that the kids do the maths in just in 3 months of school. It needs time. It needs a lot of study, and it's time to rest. It needs some rest.
I think this one, after having started, smelled and tasted it, it has a very developed knows already, and even if it's, as you say, and I do this quote sign now, only 5 years, I think it's still on its way to develop rather nicely, and it's abundant with red currant, with all the red fruits. It has everything, and as you pointed out with the barrel use, it's not very much barrel in it. There's not very much vanilla. It's not much of it. You have a hint, but not much.
But the amazing thing here is, like, this is a barrel wine, 5 years old. For 160 kroners.
Yeah, the price is it exactly 160? What's the price?
Oh, it's 159.90, so it's 160 kroners.
That was very close, yeah.
Yeah, that was really, really close. But that's amazing that you can have a wine on this level to that price still.
I think it's amazing.
When you use barrels, you use 5 years. Of course, you have the screw caps. You don't have to buy cork, but still.
I'm very curious to taste the aged child, the juvenile, that would be
the one who studied maths.
Yeah, who's actually have an exam sometimes, and Kjell Gabriel is gonna open that for us now with his normal schwung.
Oh, jeg så sterk.
Don't be shy, just let the muscle rip.
No, but this is like 2010, so this is the 14-year-old. Wine.
Lovely sound, isn't it?
Yes. I'm going to do all the work here.
Yeah, actually, 2000 and so the first one that we tasted, the 2019, is probably one of the last harvests that was kind of, let's say, normal. Because after 2019, so 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, all have been very tough kind of harvest for, in general, in Italy, but I mean in Tuscany as well. It was
too hot.
It depends. I mean, 2020 was pretty wet. I mean, there were many showers, many rains, and so at the end, we had to cut the quantity in order to have quality that was good for enough for our style. And 2022 and 2023, as you know, guys, it was exactly the opposite. It was very hot, very dry. And in 2023, we had in Italy, in Tuscany in particular, we had a very huge disease that was the mildew that cut the production by 30 to 50% in some plots. So we are going towards difficult years, but the 2020 that you are, the 2010, sorry, that you are tasting now, it is considered one of the most historical and high quality vintage for Tuscany, together with the 16, together with the 2006. So you are tasting a 5-star vintage.
Why didn't we do this 9 years ago, so we can buy more of this one, because this is really good.
Yeah, but 9 years ago, this was too young, you know.
Yeah, but then we can store it for
your personal storage. Yeah. Actually,
that would be nice. But on the nose here, it's totally different. It's dark.
It's dark. It's like chocolatey.
A lot of mushrooms. Yeah. You have the soil. I can actually smell the soil of. Right outside Montalcino, just outside, just after rain, it smells like wet Tuscan earth with the mushroom. It's actually going there. I'm at that place now in my head. That's how good this is.
Do you think that 2019 will be like this in 10 years?
Absolutely. So, okay, every vintage is different to another. So I cannot say that it will be exactly as the 10. I hope not, because they have to be different. They have to show the particularity of their vintage. But definitely those kind of wines are wines that you never have to be, that will never disappoint you. Actually, Sangiovese can only improve with the time. So it can stay in the bottle. And even if it is screw cap, screw cap is
much better.
Is anyway conductive to oxygen. So it makes the wine developed in a less strong way than with a regular cork, but it is a wine that will give you very nice performance in a few years as well.
I have to say that while you guys were talking, I had a taste, and when the youngest one, the 19 vintage, was very vibrant and very on and
a lot of acid, sort of panache, fresh you know? Fruits.
This is more not holding back, but it's more round. It's more velvety. It has the tannins are more integrated. It's actually a very very nice wine.
It's a great wine.
And I'm going out now after this this show and buy maybe a case of the 19 and save it for when I'm getting very old.
Yeah, next year.
Oh, thank you.
No, but it's really cool to see that you can buy you don't have to buy expensive wine to try to store it and see how it develops. And you said yesterday you had a tasting. How many years did you try?
We tasted back from 2019 until 2006, actually.
Oh, every year. Yeah.
Every year, yeah. Actually. Yeah, we skipped just the 2008 because I didn't find any bottle. And we also take the notorious 2014. You know that in Italy, the 2014 was not a great vintage, but it was performing well anyway. So we went back to 2006.
Did they say that?
13 years.
Yeah, 2014 was supposed to be a bad year, but for those who harvested a little bit later and those who try to store it a little bit, they see that it develops quite good.
And what I always say is that, I mean, in bad vintages is a bad vintage mostly for the producer, because we have to cut, we have to reduce actually the production in order only to give the good grapes. But I mean, consumer is normally never disappointed about the, even if it is a bad harvest, it's bad harvest for us, not for the people who drink and buy, because they only get the best.
I would like to say something to the listeners out there, and what you have been listening to now, trying to foresee how wine develops. That's a very nice and very fun thing to do. And please go out and buy your new wine. And if you can get the same wine from a few years back or as far as possible, do that and have a nice evening trying and experimenting with that.
When do you release the 2020?
The 2020 will be released more or less around Vinitaly. So let's say end of April, between mid and end of April.
So if you buy a 19 now, you don't have to wait that long for the 20. But you have to buy enough so you can try way back. So you can try each year one bottle. And you have to decide how many years you want to go back.
And
depends on how old you are.
Or how big cellar you have.
Yeah. This has been really cool. It's really cool to see the difference of like the fresh one, like 2019, and the developed one in 2010, on a really good price wine. It's really, really cool. So thank you so much for having us.
Yes, and let's say ciao also to Franco Bernabei, our star winemaker, our Mr. Sangiovese. And thanks for his great job on our Monte Antico.
He's sort of a legend, isn't he?
He's the legend of Sangiovese. So he's the hand that is also behind other wineries like Felsina, like Pontodi, like Selvapiana. And we are very proud to have him on board in our team.
And with that, we are rounding up. And I'm going to do that in Norwegian, Kjell Gabriel.
Ja, dette
var dritkult, var ikke?
Dette var kjempebra. Og vi har vært flinke, det må jeg si. Og det veldig gøy å se forskjellen på 2019 og 2010. Når du snakker om vin til 160 kroner, det jo helt magisk.
For vi glemmer det at sånn som prisen utvikler seg nå, så det ikke selvsagt å løpe inn og kjøpe god vin til under 200-lappen lenger.
Nei, og når du ser hvor bra det kan bli med hvis du har litt tålmodighet. Folk tenker kanskje, ja, men det en sånn billig vin med skrukork, nå har den ligget alt for lenge. Det veldig mange som tar på den, har den ligget for lenge? Nei. Må ligge mer.
Ja, bare la det ligge.
Ja, la det ligge. Glem det og ha det bortgjemt.
Ja. Og med det så sier vi bare tusen takk for oss, Tom Amriati Løvås fra Drinkfeed.
Og Kjell Gabriel Eikli Henriks fra Kjells Vinkjeller.
Du måtte få med mellomnavnet.
Ja, alle navn. Jeg har så langt navn.
Ha det bra der ute. Ha det bra.